Good morning. And Merry Christmas. Remember, it's still the Christmas season. In fact, today, the traditional 12th day of Christmas, you know that song, the 12 days of Christmas, the feast of the Epiphany of our Lord. But in fact, the Christmas season continues for a whole nother week until the feast of the baptism of our Lord next Sunday. So keep wishing everyone Merry Christmas. Don't take down your decorations until at least next Sunday, all right? If you've done so already, go to confession. We can't buy into our society's treatment of the holidays that anticipates them so early and then stops celebrating them the day of. So again, this feast, in fact, this feast today is kind of a bigger deal in some respects than Christmas itself. In the Eastern Catholic traditions, the Epiphany is actually a much bigger deal than Christmas, because the very word Epiphany means like a revelation, a realization. And this was the feast, this was commemorating not just when Christ was born, but when his birth was realized by the nations. The nations, the Goyim, the word meaning the non-Hebrews, the people outside of that little circle of Israel. When Christ's birth was realized to the rest of the world, that's a much bigger deal. It's the rest of the world coming to realize and celebrate the birth of our Lord. And because of that, in some traditions, like I said, this feast is even a bigger deal than Christmas. I'll submit something else to you, though. This feast is actually a very unpolitically correct feast. And let me show you how. And you've probably picked up on this in the readings, but let's start with that first reading from the book of the prophet Isaiah, prophesying to Jerusalem. He says, "Rise up in splendor, Jerusalem. Your light has come. The glory of the Lord shines upon you." He goes on, "Nations shall walk by your light, and kings by your shining radiance. They all gather and come to you. You shall be radiant. The riches of the sea shall be emptied out before you. The wealth of the nations shall be brought to you. Caravans of camels, dromedaries." Did you know there was actual distinction between a dromedary and a camel? When I was preparing for this, I said, you know, what does that actually mean? Apparently, a camel has two humps, a dromedary has one. Caravans and dromedaries, and from Sheba, and shall come to you. There's this sense that everything is coming to Jerusalem. That Jerusalem is kind of the focus here, that eventually everyone will come to Jerusalem. And you might say, okay, well, what's so politically incorrect about that? Well, the fact that Jerusalem being the capital of Israel, Jerusalem being the focus here, that Christ is born as the King of Israel, and the New Jerusalem being heaven, that what's being said here is that everyone is ultimately going to have this epiphany, this realization, that the truth is found here in Jerusalem. And as if that weren't clear enough, the responsorial psalm, "Lord, every nation on earth will adore you." Every single nation will one day come to realize that Jesus Christ is Lord. St. Paul, in that second reading from his letter to the Ephesians, says the same thing, that it was made known to him, but as it has now been revealed to his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit, that the Gentiles are co-heirs, that this is not, that this birth of this long-awaited Messiah is not just for this little tiny tribe of Jewish people. It's for the whole world, that Christ came to save everyone, that this is a universal religion, a universal feast day. And then finally in the gospel. In the gospel, there's this mysterious group, the Magi. What exactly are they? Are they kings? Are they wise men? Are they philosophers, astronomers? I won't get too much into that right now, but I will, if you're interested in reading some more about it, our Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, just right before Advent began, published the third book in his trilogy on Jesus of Nazareth. And he has an entire section devoted to who and what the Magi are. And it's very interesting what he has to say about that. But what's interesting is that they represent, and this is kind of what our Holy Father is getting at, they represent the nations, the other people, the rest of the world coming to Christ, coming to a realization that he is the truth. And of course, we know that Christ himself would go on to say, I am the way, the truth, and the life, right? And one of the things our Holy Father points out, that the three Magi, interestingly enough, according to tradition, whether or not this is true, but according to tradition, there's still a certain truth in it, that's why one of them was of European descent, one of them was from Asian descent, and one of them was African descent. And also he points out, too, how traditionally one was young, one was middle-aged, one was elderly, to kind of represent this, the whole everyone, from everywhere, from every time, from every age, that Christ is for everyone. Again, not just for this little group of people. Yes, it was that little group of people who had received all these prophecies that one day your Messiah is going to come, but when he comes, that he has come to save everyone. And that's what this feast is celebrating, that basically it's the triumph, and again, this is where it sounds really politically incorrect, this feast is basically the triumph of Christianity over and against all other religions. You know, some of you know that I do my apologetics class. Well, I don't know how all of you don't know this by now, but you all should know because I announce it every month. I do my apologetics class on the fourth Thursday of each month. And during this year of faith, we've been reviewing the documents of Vatican II. One of the things our Holy Father asked us to do was to actually look at what the documents themselves say. In this year of faith, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Second Vatican Council. And he said, why don't you look at what the documents actually say? This past, well, 2 weeks ago, when I had it in December, the last Thursday in December, we looked at the document, the third document to come out of Vatican II, Lumen Gentium. And the very word Lumen Gentium is Latin for a light to the nations, meaning to the peoples, to everyone else. And it's the document about the church. It's talking about how the church is this light to the nations. And I think some of the people who were at my presentation were surprised to hear what Vatican II actually said about the church and about Jesus Christ. So many people have this idea that Vatican II, you know, finally got the church over her arrogance that we're right and everyone else is wrong, and that Vatican II said that all religions are equal and that Jesus Christ is really just one way to God and that there are many paths. And it's not what Vatican II said at all. My God, you look at the document, you look at Lumen Gentium, they have an entire chapter on how Jesus Christ is the only way to God, and how the church is his only instrument. And goes on to say the Catholic Church, that the fullness of the truth subsists in the Catholic Church. Now, the Vatican II documents go on to point out that there are absolutely, and this was perhaps the novelty of Vatican II, that there are elements of the truth and elements of sanctification to be found outside of the Catholic Church for sure. Absolutely. Even our Protestant brothers and sisters who are not Catholic, they still have a lot of elements of the truth and of sanctification. After all, they have the Bible, although in a slightly deficient form, missing some of the books. They have some of the sacraments. They have baptism, right? But even outside of Christianity, there are certain elements of the truth to be found in Judaism, in Islam. There are certain elements of the truth to be found even in all sorts of other religions that might not even be Christian or even monotheistic, but at least have a sense of, I have an obligation to worship God. And so, yeah, Vatican II pointed that out, absolutely, that there are elements of truth and sanctification to be found outside of the Catholic Church, but that doesn't diminish the fact that Jesus Christ is the one mediator between God and man, and that anyone who ends up being saved is saved through Jesus Christ. They may not know it. It may not be a baptism here on earth. It may be a so-called baptism of desire, but that everyone in heaven is not just Christian, but Catholic. And it sounds very bad to say that. And yet, that's what the church has always taught. That's what Vatican II confirmed. And that's what I think makes this feast so politically incorrect. that what we're saying here is that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. Not just one among many. He is the way, the truth, and the life. The only way, the truth, and the only life. And yes, sure, there are elements of truth and sanctification to be found outside of that that kind of point to him, and it's only because of a certain participation in him as the truth that they do exist outside. But I think, I would wrap up with this, I think that we as a church don't act like how we believe. I think that we as a church, and especially as individual members of the church, you know, maybe we're still looking at what our New Year's resolutions could be at the beginning of this year. Maybe one of them could be, I'm going to start behaving and acting like what I profess, what I profess to believe. That what that means is I'm going to go out of my way to not beat people over the head with the truth, but if I really truly believe what the Catholic Church says they believe, if I believe that the Catholic Church does have the fullness of the truth, why wouldn't I want everyone else on the face of this earth to have that? Why would I want to deprive someone of that possibility? Right? Now, again, we don't go around beating people with the truth. But if we really believe what we say we believe, we should be more evangelistic. I was having dinner with a friend the other night, and he said that when the Catholic Church becomes more evangelical, the evangelicals will become more Catholic. I think that's true. That's a famous line, that we need to be willing to present the fullness of the truth. We need to be bold in our proclamation of it and not make excuses for it. Not say, well, you know, I am Catholic, but, you know, the Catholic Church, they move slower than molasses. You know, what can you expect? No, we can't do that. That's insulting the truth. Again, we don't beat people over the heads with it. We don't say you're going to go to hell if you don't become a Catholic, because that's not true either. But do we really believe what we say we believe? If we really believe what we say we believe, what Vatican II confirmed that we believe, we should be willing to present the fullness of the truth to our Protestant brothers and sisters, to our Jewish brothers and sisters, our Muslim brothers and sisters, our non-Christian brothers and sisters. We should be willing to propose. And this is where the new evangelization comes in. Benedict XVI said, we do not impose, we propose. We don't impose the faith on people as if we could forcibly convert them, as if that even would be a conversion. We don't impose it, we propose it. We say, this is a better way. And it's not, and me presenting this to you, it's not that I know better, it's not that I'm holier or closer to God or anything. It's that God has blessed me, blessed the church, blessed me as a member of the Catholic Church to come to know this, what St. Paul says, through revelation, but not for my own good, but for everyone else's good. I am called to bring everyone else to the Lord. I am called to bring everyone else to the fullness of the truth, which again, as Vatican II reminds us, subsists in the Catholic Church. How willing are we to reach out? Again, I think sometimes we kind of want to hide back and make excuses. But today on this feast day, and again, as we're perhaps still forming New Year's resolutions, maybe that can be one of them, that we're going to actually start acting like what we believe. We're going to start living how we profess. So let's start doing that as a church and as individual members of the church. And again, as we continue this Christmas season, we remember that Jesus Christ became a man. He took on our human nature so that we could have that greater union with others. And it's not just for us, it's for everyone. So that's what we should be doing during this Christmas season, bringing that great gift to all of our families and friends.